Creating your own reality. Is it possible for me? I am Jennifer K. Hill, the Consciousness Architect, and I am here to tell you that it's not only possible, it's closer than you might think. Welcome to the show. Hello, friends, and thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Regarding Consciousness. It is always a lot of fun to get to talk to thought leaders from around the world and share their deep wisdom with you and for you. Today, we have a special topic that we haven't touched on this show. It used to be my wheelhouse, an old podcast I used to host years ago called Get Yourself the Job That You Can Still Find. Though one of the biggest things that we invest our time and our energy in any of our lifetimes, is work. So the question then becomes, what is the future of work? And how does our consciousness determine that? Which is exactly what today's guest, Gary Bowles, will be sharing with us. Before I formally introduce you to Gary, let me share with you some of the highlights from his career. Gary joins us from San Francisco, California, and is also the chair of the Future of Work with Singularity University and a partner in a strategy consulting firm, Charette. A globally recognized expert on the future of work, he consults with C-suites, leaders around the globe on different issues ranging from labor and education, working with companies from Brazil to Canada. He is the co-founder of eParachute.com, inspired by his father's best-selling book, What Color is Your Parachute? And is a visiting lecturer to a variety of school systems, including Isha Vidya in India, and a regular guest lecturer for Gartner. Gary, it's a pleasure. I'm so grateful that we're able to connect today and share some of your wisdom on what we can expect in the future and how our consciousness can entangle and intertwine with that.
Absolutely. Now, we're looking forward to the conversation.
Okay, so talk to us a little bit, Gary, about your background. Did you always know that you were interested in the future of work?
So I'd have to say no. I barely escaped high school. I was never really interested in college. So I did a lot of odd jobs. And one of the odd jobs is I fell into the family business. And it just so happened that my father was a recovering minister who ended up writing the world's career manual, What Color is Your Parachute? So I was trained as a career counselor when I was 19 years old. Fascinated by it, but knew that wasn't my vocation. And instead, I stumbled on this thing called the computer. In the early 1980s and fell into pretty much every role that you can do in Silicon Valley, from corporate executive to entrepreneur, and launched a number of initiatives related to impact. And it was only more recent years when I began working with Singularity University, helping them to produce global events. And the topic of the future of work just kept coming up again and again. And I've had quite a number of thoughts about the future of work, the future of learning, and the future of organizations. And so Singularity has been a marvelous collaborator and given me a launch pad to be able to reach a wide variety of audiences to help them think about just how we might actually craft their own futures.
And let's talk about that for a moment. It's funny, I was having an existential debate with friends over drinks last night in Lisbon here, and we were talking about this very concept. What part of it is nature? What part of it is nurture? How much of a say do we have in our own career path? What is your thoughts on that after studying this for many years?
It's humans. We make decisions. We continually encounter situations. We solve problems. And it turns out that we weren't given a user manual when we were born. Nobody came to the delivery room with the nurse and said, oh, and here's the user manual for this baby. Here's all the skills this baby is going to love to develop. Here's all of the ways that this baby is going to love to solve problems. Here's all the things that you know from the characteristics of people choosing work. And because we don't have a user manual, we become trial and error machines. And so the way I talk about nature versus nurture is that nature, that our genes, the process of coming into this world, that's the clay. And then we and our experiences shape the clay. And we make decisions. We're continually encountering different situations. And sometimes we have great awareness and understanding of the ramifications of those decisions. And sometimes we don't, because we're trial and error machines and we're all just trying to keep on figuring out ways to solve problems. And so to some people, especially those who were born on second base, to use a baseball analogy, they were given from a nurture standpoint, really good clay. Like you got a lot of assets and the resources. And there are others who were not given those advantages and have to work much, much harder to be able to develop their own user manual, understand more about themselves, and to be able to try to achieve what they'd like in life. And so for each of us, the more awareness we have of what it is that motivates us, what it is that is baked into a lot of that nature that each of us has, we also then need to be able to develop the awareness of what we have control over, what we can continually do to shape our own clay, and where it is that we can create the opportunities, especially in a world of exponential change, when the rules keep changing around us. And the old rules of work in a much more static period of life, we didn't need to adapt quite as rapidly as many of us have to adapt today. And that itself is a skill set. That itself is something that each of us need to develop a capacity to be able to deal with a world that changes so rapidly.
I'm being called to remind our listeners of a recent episode we did, and I think it would be a great introduction for you if you remind me of it, Gary. We also had a guest on the show a few months back by the name of Dr. Antoine Ede out of Cambridge, who has a company called meetyourself.me. And what's fascinating that he did, it's exactly the clay analogy that you're talking about, is they take your genetics. I'm in beta with them, so I'll let everybody know what I think once I finish the process, where they analyze your genetics, tell you your predisposition, then analyze you from a behavioral and motivating factor standpoint to see what was our organic clay. Now, to your point about second base, I want to clarify that, as some of our listeners and viewers might be inquiring what you mean by that. When you're talking about second base, are you talking about our socioeconomic standing, our mental capacities? When you say that, what are you referring to?
It's all the above. So absolutely socioeconomic standings, advantages, resources, geographical location, all of those play into where we start, where on the game board, how far along on the game board each of us is. But then also, physiological, depending upon our goals in life, right? So if I want to be a basketball player and I'm 5'10", I'm going to have to work a lot harder than somebody who is 6'10". And so my father was 6'5". So never interested in basketball. But each of those characteristics, I agree, it's tremendously helpful to understand what's in the clay. What do I always urge people is to be thinking of all of that as information, as resources, but not as limitations. And so what some people say is, oh no, I was born with this limitation or that limitation. Or when we think of skills, especially skills, self-management skills, what I call self-skills, we think of those as immutable. They're traits. They're not changeable. And I think what's really important is for people to have that information, but then to understand how they can use it to their advantage and not to feel that it actually disadvantages them.
Yeah, I think that in all circumstances in life, we can see ourselves as the cause or at the effect of something. And I think the moment we see ourselves at the effect of our genetics, at the effect of our environment we grew up in, wherever in the board we were or were not, I think that's a limiting perspective that then is going to allow us to give away our power, as opposed to choosing wherever, whatever place on the board we are given, whether we are born with millions of dollars, billions of dollars, or people with no money or lack of circumstances and even food and resources. I think that at some level, going back to the consciousness side, our soul, from many of my teachers who I've studied with in Kabbalah and other things, actually choose our circumstances so that we can evolve as human beings. Now, taking it back to the traditional sense of the future of work, the concern I hear around the world, I'm speaking at a lot of HR conferences myself and at traveling around the world, talking to quite a variety of people. And everybody from blue collar workers to white collar workers seems to be intimidated and in some cases downright afraid of AI. With what you're seeing in the marketplace, what do you think the future of work is going to look like with the emergence of AI and certain jobs becoming obsolete?
Absolutely. One of the things I talk about in my book, The Next Rules of Work, is I've got a chapter on the history of the future of work. And so first off, I think it's important for all of us to remember that technology has always impacted work, and humans have always freaked out about technology impact. Aristotle, quite famously, talked about his worries that quite literally, robots could learn how to play musical instruments, and then you wouldn't need a human to play the lyre anymore. And so we've had these impacts of technology over and over again. And to mangle Winston Churchill, he said, we shape our buildings, and then our buildings shape us. We shape our technologies, and then our technologies shape us. And this thing called the internet that some of your listeners might use every now and then. I actually helped the co-founded a magazine in 1994 called Interactive Week, which was the internet's first newspaper. And we were saying it's going to have massive disruption on jobs, but it's also going to create tremendous opportunity. And as a recovering journalist, having run magazines, I can tell you, yes, it had a big impact on especially the jobs of journalists and magazines and newspapers, but it created a huge amount of new opportunity. What is true over and over again in this era, I believe, is that it's actually the pace and the scale of change. It's that it's happening so rapidly. New tools come out, ChatGPT, Midjourney, we start to play with these tools and our minds are blown because it looked like such a leap forward. And it's so widespread. The scale of it is breathtaking. It's in all the headlines. And again, it's perfectly understandable that we would, as humans, we freak out about this stuff. And in some cases, very justifiably, because of the disruption that it can have. And what's important for each of us is to, going back to consciousness, is to be very aware of what it is that we most want to accomplish in our life, the kinds of work that we most want to do, what we feel our purpose with a little p or purpose with a big P is. And that we then are thinking of these as tools that we can try to leverage. And as much as possible to be able to see how they might be able to give us advantages. And there's always jobs, certain categories of jobs that are in the center of the target. They're the canaries in the coal mine. They're the jobs that go away very quickly, like journalist jobs did with the advent of the internet. And there's certain work roles that these technologies are impacting right now. In every single case, they always give new advantages. And the challenge for each of us as humans is how rapidly can we understand these tools and then how quickly can we apply them and leverage them for our own benefit?
What do you think the future of work will hold in terms of jobs? So we're seeing the emergence, just like you said, of when the internet happened, new roles became available. Now with the advent of AI and the future of that, what new roles do you think that are going to come out that some of us can't even foresee, though we might want to start preparing for in some way?
Absolutely. If I told you, I didn't know, but if I told you 25 years ago with the advent of the internet, 30 years ago with the advent of the internet, that there were going to be these things called podcasts, and you were going to be able to use these tools to interview humans and have your own TV show on this thing called the internet, you probably would have just scratched your head and said, I can't even envision what that would be like. And how would I have an audience? And what would they be? What would I talk about? For many of us, we can't really envision that some of those future work roles because we morph into those opportunities, right? And those opportunities develop over time. And then those that are more able to be or more optimized for being able to adapt, such as you, can now say, oh, well, I'm going to leverage those tools. And yes, I will have my own online TV show. But there are certain places that we can predict that it's pretty likely that the jobs will change. The one asterisk I want to make sure we're giving to your listeners is these new tools, especially artificial intelligence tools, generative artificial intelligence, and what are called large language models, they typically are useful in jobs that are very information intensive. And in most economies around the world, that's only about 40% of the jobs. So if you're a plumber, if you're an electrician, if you're a car repair person, these tools are not going to have that much impact on your work for quite some time. And so we tend to look at these signs of different tools. We hear people talk about, it's often called artificial general intelligence and consciousness, with quotation air quotes, in software, and we worry then, oh, that's going to take away all the work of humans. And if people like Elon Musk keep saying that, then maybe we start to believe that it's going to be true. There's a wide range of work roles where leveraging these tools will allow us to do things we could never have done before. Think of what it used to take to produce a TV show, the incredible number of people, the costs of doing those broadcasts. And now you can do it with these much more egalitarian tools for far less money than ever needed to be done before. So think about all the things now that are very expensive, what used to be able to create content, the things that we rely on humans to do. Those are things now that each of us can do. A good friend of mine is a longtime Silicon Valley technologist, David Simpery. And he's got an idea for a research tool built on some of these tools like ChatGPT. He was able to create an application, test it, have it give him advice on how to market it. One guy didn't hire a single person, and he's not even a great programmer. He used the tool to be able to do a lot of the programming. So think of every human being on the planet now being able to have their own software company and what they might be able to accomplish if they could do that. And the vistas open up. The aperture doesn't close. It's not so much less work for humans. It's so much more opportunity for humans if each of us is able to adapt.
I completely agree. When you think of driverless cars, for example, I haven't driven myself for over 5 years, almost 6 years now. And I was in the Bay Area recently and I saw my first driverless cars and it's wow. And I remember there was a gentleman in London who was my Uber driver sometime last year, I believe it was. And he was lamenting to me. He was an immigrant. He was trying to provide for his family. He wasn't particularly happy being a driver. And my question, whenever I know we do things out of survival, is why do something that doesn't light you up? And so we start engaging about this. And he says, what else could I do? And I said, with today's modern society, I'll give you an example. I'm a podcaster. I'm constantly hiring people. This is before we streamlined it all under our current producer. I'm constantly hiring people to edit the video clips, do this, pull out the video clips, do that. I said, you learn how, go on YouTube, teach yourself how to do this, then go out, create a Fiverr or an Upwork account or whatever it is, have five friends hire you, five friends write you, you're off to the races. You are now officially a coder, a video editor, a AI expert, a prompt expert. And that is the extraordinary thing with the evolution of where we are in the future of work. We can become experts at just about anything by utilizing our ability to research and engage with the information that already exists out there, correct?
Absolutely. But again, to come back to some of what I think of as some of the anchors of consciousness. So what you just talked about is the process of being awake and aware, of not thinking of yourself as being limited by your current circumstances, but where all the opportunities might be, the kinds of problems that you might be able to solve. And then what I would often call agency. So agency is the belief that you can take an action and there might be a positive outcome. And so when there are apps that you can download and you can drive your car and pick up people, again, something that we would have said 30 years ago is not going to happen. Didn't your mother tell you not to get into a stranger's car? And Ojiwa does it all the time. And so to have the agency to believe that you can learn these new skills, that there is opportunity out there. The problem is that many of us are blind to those things. And so this is really what agency requires, is for us to open up the aperture, to understand our own skills, to understand the kind of problems that we like to solve, and then to be able to seek out and develop those opportunities. And because, as you say, there are these platforms like Upwork and Fiverr that allow us to be able to promote our skills, to be able to offer our skills to others on a global basis, that's an opportunity that nobody in history before now has had. And so that gives us tremendous access to opportunities for work. We just need to have that catalyst. We need to have that agency for each of us as individuals.
Let's pretend, Gary, that somebody is watching or listening right now and they feel trapped. They feel like they're not going to survive. They're barely surviving as it is, putting food on the table. It's great to have these conversations about the future of work and consciousness, but what if I'm just surviving? What's the first step you would recommend somebody who's in that position, who feels boxed in, who's resentful, frustrated with the world and the circumstances, bitter, how do we transform our consciousness and awareness to open ourselves and our aperture up to see what's available?
No, I think that's a marvelous question. And first off, I have tremendous compassion because I think we all go through those periods. When I was young and didn't know my own career direction, which is doing a bunch of odd jobs, I had very low self-esteem. I didn't go to college or really it was rudderless. And so I have tremendous compassion for anybody who goes through those kinds of challenges in their lives. And one of the great insights that my father had years ago as a recovery minister, had tremendous compassion, heard quite a bit about people's personal and spiritual journeys as well. This hope is the way we develop agency is to hope that we can take an action and there's going to be a positive outcome. And when life kicks us and we feel that we are at the bottom of the well, it's very difficult to look up and to generate hope. So what are some of the things that we find? First up, I think of them as a series of doors that you can walk through. And there's no one door that is right for everybody. But there are certain doors that we've found in the past have been helpful to people. I was on the board of a nonprofit in Los Angeles 30 years ago that did job counseling with the homeless. So many of these challenges that we have today are not new. We've had them for quite some time. And so a couple of doors I suggest. First off, what's really helpful is to develop the understanding of your own strengths. And so my father called this self-inventory, but any process that you could go through to be able to understand your own skills, to be able to understand the kinds of problems that you like to solve, any way you can codify that. We've got on eParachute.com, we've got a very simple tool that anybody can take that in about 10 minutes can give them some insights into their skills. We also have a link to a course that is my father's entire process, what he called the flower, and helping people to do that self-inventory. And it's a paid course, but we never want anybody to have any challenges in not being able to take it. So they can simply email us and we'll give them a free code. We want everybody to be able to have that advantage. You might just talk to your friends. You might just ask them what your greatest skills are. You do inventory, look at the work that you've done before and the problems that you've solved. Whatever gives you those insights into yourself, that's a first door. Second door is to take small risks. So you talk to that new Uber driver, and what I would want to encourage him to do is to say, okay, I want you to do just one little project. Take one video and edit it, or one, and just the tiniest step you can do in heading down that pathway to test it out. Do you like it? Do you feel you can be good at it? Can you learn? And what we find is that the third door that you want to develop is eventually a North Star or a Southern Cross, something that pulls you forward, something that continues to motivate you, that continues to help to drive agency. And each of us has a variety of different things that we might be able to do in that more positive future. And so whatever it is that resonates with your listeners, with even people that your listeners know, I would encourage them to try to help people to be able to develop that greater self-esteem, to be able to develop that agency, and to develop hope that they might take the next step towards a more positive life. Hmm.
Yeah, it reminds me of a quote, I believe it was Howard Thurman, who said, "Don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive and then go and do that." Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. And that's what I think of when you share those doors and the opportunities that are before us.
Yeah. And that's yet another door. Is sometimes people find something outside of themselves that drives them. My wife and I, we helped to produce a conference in Amman, Jordan for refugee youth from around the Middle East and Northern Africa. And it was one of the most inspirational groups I've ever met. Young people 18 to 25 years old. And there was a young man who was living in a refugee camp. And he was rudderless. He was in his early 20s. He had no purpose. And he saw a young kid sitting by herself and walked up to her, and it turns out she was an orphan, and she and the family that had been taking care of her had left, and she had nobody. So he took her in, and then he found another kid. And within 6 months, he had started an orphanage. He found a nonprofit that could support him. And he had found his life's work. And so over and over again, this is yet another tour, is to find the thing that drives you, that either gives you a small P purpose and feeling like, oh, this is something my skills I'm good at, or a big P, a capital P purpose. This is why I'm here on the planet. I need to do this thing next. Whatever it is that you can do to find that can be your North Star or Southern Cross that pulls you forward.
Yeah, I think it was the creator Peter Pan who said, it's only work if you'd rather be doing something else. And that really is the big P purpose, even the little P purpose. When we get up and it fulfills our heart with joy, my God, we spend 40, 80, 100 hours or more a week sometimes, more time than we do with our family or anybody else. Life is too short from a consciousness standpoint. Our vitality is directly correlated to how much fulfillment we get at what we're doing every day. If we come home depleted, drained, angry, resentful, bitter, that's going to deplete our life vitality, our life source, the energy that propels us. And on the other hand, something I will offer to our guests as well and our viewers and people listening out there, some of my favorite tools that I use are human design and gene keys. Say you're not going to spend the money on meetyourself.me to find out exactly what you're destined for. I love to look up gene keys. Literally, you go to genekeys.com/, I think it's free profile. I'm not affiliated with them in any way. My favorite thing, I've done this for Uber drivers. There was another Uber driver one time in LA. I was being picked up in Beverly Hills and he was driving me to Santa Monica. It's 10:30 at night on a Friday. And he says, I get in the car. He says, ma'am, you become ma'am at some point in your life. Ma'am, my life is almost over. I'm going to be 21 next week. I'm like, kiddo. I was like, your life is about to begin. Just stop it. I was like, give me your birthday. So we start like running all these numbers. So Gene Keys is based on human design. It was developed by Richard Rudd. And what's incredible is he calls his mom at 10:30 at night. I'm plugging in the data and it starts going through. What's his purpose? What's going to fulfill him? What's going to help him? So if you feel rudderless, you don't know where to even begin, try some of these wonderful tools. Go to eParachute.com. Go to GeneKeys.com. There are so many phenomenal free resources. And I think our biggest opportunity and obstacle is that we get in our own way and self-sabotage, and we'd rather stew in self-loathing and victimization than take the necessary right action to make choices that propel us into our purpose. So it's been such a pleasure to have you here with us today, Gary. And I would love to know, are there any closing thoughts that you'd love to leave our listeners and viewers with today?
So I think the one other thing I'd urge, you mentioned at one point, talking about people's concerns about technology, and just because we're talking, since obviously our anchor here is consciousness, is one of the very deep-seated fears by a lot of humans is that these technologies themselves will be developing their own consciousness. And we already hear quite a bit of some of the developers of those tools and talking about their consciousness. And what I would urge, I focus so much on a human-centric future of work and learning and life. And what I would urge your listeners is to be absolutely, there's definitely concerns about these technologies and their impact on work. But at the end of the day, this is all about each of us as humans and how it is that we connect with each other, how it is that we develop as individuals, how it is that we help others to be able to develop and to have the lives that they want. These technologies should be supports for us. They should be the tools that each of us use to be able to achieve what we want in life. I talk in my book, The Next Rules of Work, about mindset, skill set, and tool set. These are tools. And so I would worry less about whether or not somebody has some test proved that they have consciousness or not, and instead focus on how it is that we could help every individual in with whom we come in contact to be able to help develop their own consciousness, to be able to achieve their own goals in life, and just use these as tools, these technologies as tools to help us to accomplish those goals.
So beautiful, Gary. You've shared a lot of deep wisdom for us, hopefully some inspiring wisdom and tidbits of value that we can all take with us out into our capital P purpose. Gary, where can people connect with you? I know we mentioned eParachute.com. Is there anywhere else you'd like people to go to connect more deeply with you?
I'd say probably on LinkedIn. I've got 10 courses on LinkedIn with about 1.5 million learners. That tends to be where people find me. And I've got an email newsletter where I talk about a lot of these issues on a weekly basis.
Beautiful, Gary. Thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you to each of you for listening, giving us your time, and for being committed to your future, the future of whatever your work, your purpose, little p, big P, looks like. We encourage you to go out there, find that flame, find that spark, give it a little love, nurture it until finally one day, it might be tomorrow, it might be a year, it might be 10 years from now, that you too have found your purpose. I am Jennifer Cahill, and thank you for your time.